What's going on, guys? This is episode 94, Unstoppable REI Wealth. I'm interviewing a young dude by age. Guy's 29 years old, comes from Google, tech world. In a short period of time, I'm talking like less than 2 years, this guy has built out a short-term rental business, but with a spin. He's marrying, developed his own technology, his own investment fund, and his own operational company. And he's melded these three together to create this vision of taking the short-term rental business into a fund to one day sell it off to either the hedge or a family office. Honestly, the conversation did not know it was going to go this way. When I read his bio, I didn't get this from it. Seriously impressed. This guy is smart as shit. He knows what he's doing. The technology that he developed to figure out where to invest, his proprietary technology on the short-term side, is killer. And the way in which he recruits his people, because that's what he did over at Global, in a short amount of time, he's built a team of over 24 people, AAA plus players. You guys are going to enjoy it. It's Seif Kafargi, and hope you guys really enjoy. The guy is smart. You'll learn some things. You can even invest in his fund. Enjoy, guys.
Welcome to Unstoppable Real Estate Investing Wealth. My name is Billy Alvaro, a.k.a. the Unstoppable VA. Former billion-dollar mortgage banker, gone bankrupt, turned professional real estate investor. Where each week, you'll learn the tools, strategies, systems, and secrets myself and other highly successful real estate investing entrepreneurs use to start, grow, and scale their businesses, creating massive profits, and how you can too. And we'll teach you how to put those profits to work so you no longer have to. Get ready to finally experience financial freedom and generational wealth. Now let's get started.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. Another episode, Unstoppable REI Wealth. Unstoppable for a reason, because we just keep on pushing forward, making shit happen, teaching you guys the secrets of how we create wealth, cash flow, flip properties, wholesale, all that good stuff. So watching this, listening to this for a while, you know that I'm all about teaching people how to start, grow, and scale. And I love nothing more than to get different tranches from those groups. I had on a bunch of people on the scaling side, the growth side. Yo, this young cat today, 29 years old, only been doing this for like a year from what he told me. His name is, I don't want to butcher it, Seif Kafargi. Did I get it right?
Yeah, Seif Kafargi. Thanks so much, Billy. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show, brother. So let's do, you're 29 years old. You've only been doing this for a short time. Like a short time from what you told me. Let's go back and how did help? What did you do prior to getting into real estate investing?
I was a recruiter and managed teams early at Facebook. So I spent 5 years at Facebook building teams all across the world. And I think of it as building a company because our team was 89 when I started and we took it to 1,100. Wow. So to me, that felt like company growth, not just team growth. And we certainly treated it that way. And I think that's why a big philosophy of ours today with what we do over at TechVestor is all about people, right? That's why we're in the short-term rental space, hospitality, but also making the investment experience as passive, easy, and simple as possible. And you know, from what I'm told, our investor experience is one of the best that our LPs get to experience.
I love this. So you keep referring to we. You have partners in the business?
I do. So Sabrina is my partner and co-founder, and she herself has a really impressive backstory. She built AirPods and took that to a $1 billion product. So we both come from tech, and the short story there is we were traveling all ourselves and staying in all these shitty Airbnbs back in the day. And we were like, damn, we really think we could do this better. And so we went and tried to acquire a couple, and that process was just old and archaic. Keep in mind, we're coming from like these very privileged tech campuses where, you know, everything and how you do things is like, you know, tech enabled, right? Like how you move around and just like the things we see. And then you enter the world of real estate and short-term rentals. And it's like, you know, kind of that feeling of like when you see a fax machine these days, you're like, people still use that, right? And so our first foray into this was actually building software. Naturally, two techies, what else do we do? We built software. We built software that would allow us to help, you know, identify and discover the best possible places to invest based on data, right? Because everything is data driven that we do here every single day. We showed the software to everyone we could. Everyone loved it. Problem is no one wanted to use it. They were like, this is great, but you know what? You do all the work for me and I'll happily give you some capital. Right? Like, I don't want to do this. And that's kind of when we kind of learned a little bit more about the world of funds and syndications. And, you know, we would raise our first tranche then. And today we've, you know, raised a good amount of money to continue scaling this thesis. And we're really trying to institutionalize the space of short-term rentals. We really think it's the highest cash flowing asset that you can buy in the real estate space. And honestly, one of the most fun, one that gives back to the community by providing experiences to us in a post-pandemic world, I hope. We were all cooped up for far too long.
So there's three things I want to discuss with you. You mentioned the technology. I want to get into that. You mentioned how you're doing the short-term rentals a little bit differently. I want to get into that. And then the third piece is most important. I want to speak about your investors and how you're bringing them in and what makes you different with everybody else. Let's start on the tech side. Your software, you said it figures out where to best invest based on data. Is that the sum of it, or is there other stuff that it does as well?
Yeah, so really it's two or three points really that we kind of want to accomplish with our software. The first one is we do what's called market mapping. So right now we're tracking about 257 local markets where we track the supply and demand of properties in that market. We track other data points are what kind of home is best to buy, what's the highest ROI. So for example, in Scottsdale, Arizona, depending on the zip code you're in and really which neighborhood, the difference between a 4 and a 5 bedroom is massive. Right, understanding what to buy, what your buy box looks like in each local market. We believe every market is investable and each market has the best type of return depending on the type of asset you buy.
Specifically, right? For short-term rentals.
Exactly, specifically for short-term rentals. Early on, we were lucky enough to bring on Scott Shatford, who is the founder of AirDNA, as one of our advisors. Rob Abasola, who's the host of the Bigger Pockets podcast, also sits with us. So we have what we call key people in key places. You know, Laszlo, I was previously the SVP of analytics at realtor.com. So we plug into the MLS nationwide. So these are kind of the advantages we have there. Secondly, after we market map is all about speed and discovery, right? I mean, we can all remember this. We can all agree that the market today is a little softer than it was about a year ago. But last year, I mean, properties were going off the shelf in about 5 seconds or less, yeah. Right? So you gotta know what's coming on market as quickly as possible. So our software, every 15 seconds rescrubs the entire country and tells us what just hit the market, right? And if it qualifies for what we're looking for, we get alerted, right? So speed mattered at the time and still matters today to an extent. And lastly, from an operating perspective, we understand what the best comps are. We understand we never go and enter a market or buy a property thinking we're going to do better than what the data today suggests, right? So we're buying within that buy box. However, based on our operational excellence so far, we've been able to drive 42% more revenue and 52% more occupancy than the average property in our markets, right? But this is what the software allows us to understand is what to buy. And we both know you make money on the buy and you reduce your risk significantly on the buy when you understand the data.
No doubt. Incredible. And you and your partner, you brainiacs that you are, you created this stuff on your own. You did all the coding over the back end.
So Sabrina is definitely more the technical one. She, you know, because of her role over at Apple and being a project manager on a more technical product, she took the lead on the technical side. My background is predominantly in people, right? In building, the people on my team call me the DM King, predominantly because I think we have the best STR specific talent in the space. Our team is fantastic. I mean, you look at people like Taylor, who's our head of acquisition. Dude is a sniper in the short-term rental space. John, who's our head of data. He's literally known as the Airbnb data guy, right? So we built the best possible talent and operational infrastructure in addition to the best technical infrastructure to go out and scale the shit out of this.
Damn, bro, this is insane. All right, let's flip it over now to the second point, which is you're getting into the space because you said you're going to be doing things differently, right? Like this whole thing, you're going to turn it upside down. What did you see that were the issues in the short-term space, and what are you doing to correct those issues?
I mean, I don't know where to start here, Billy, but let's dive into it. You ever go on Airbnb and you look at a home and you're like, my grandma designed this?
Yeah.
Right? Or the photos look like it was taken on like an iPhone 3 back in the day. You know what I'm talking about? Like that 6-megapixel camera. So, you know, the nice thing from an investment perspective in the short-term rental space is 95-98% of the market is mom and pop. And while we wish them the best, there's no institutional competition in this space as you'll find in versus like multifamily and office and industrial, predominantly because no institution has the time or energy or currently want to actually get into the space and start all this from scratch, right? It's hard, right? If you're an institution, you got $100 million you want to spend and deploy, It's very easy to go put that into an apartment building or a couple of those, right? Yep. Try doing 100 million in single family short-term rentals across 8 different markets. That's a company in itself to do, right? And not your best use of time. So really what we saw is an opportunity to enter, institutionalize a asset class that institutions want to get into, but what they want is they want to roll up, right? So our business plan is very simple. Buy a bunch of single family homes across several years and several markets and drive, you know, a T24 or 24 months plus of really great operational infrastructure and revenue. Sell that to a larger private equity firm or family office because they will buy 500 short-term rentals.
Of course. Yep.
Right? 100% because the work's been done for them. It's a stabilized yield to some extent at that point. And what's really awesome, I think, about our business model and really what we're thinking about is our operational infrastructure becomes a secret sauce to their properties that they've acquired. So even when we sell, right, our operating company can actually continue to drive revenue because most likely they're going to want to leverage our software, leverage our operating team, because they're going to see it as a risk where, you know, hey, we want you guys to continue managing it because clearly you've managed it well. So continue managing it for us. Right. And so that's really where like this long tailwind of continuous residual income kind of continues to drive. Right. And of course, we'll capitalize on the equity at that exit for our investors as well.
This is insane. I had no idea. I got to be honest with you. When I read your bio, I did not know this conversation was going to happen because you got to update this.
I really should. Yeah, I'll reach out to Nicole on that.
yeah, no doubt. I mean, what you're saying is some brilliant shit, man. Like, I'm seeing where this is going to be going. So single family side, you have your software, you're figuring out what markets, do you have specific states that you're hitting, or are you doing this nationally? Are you doing this globally? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so today we're fully domestic. While we track 257 markets, we're only in about 8 markets today. So that includes places like Scottsdale, Arizona. That includes places like Panama City Beach, as well as like Memphis, Tennessee. We're in the Hudson Valley, right, closer to you a little bit. And, you know, our strategy on a portfolio basis is very simple. It's half destination markets and half kind of metros, right? Destination markets are going to be your cities and mountain towns where people want to get away, right, especially post-pandemic. And, you know, metros are going to be your Scottsdale and your Memphises, Clearwater as an example. But the pandemic changed us all. I think we can all agree for a second, right? Remote work is here to stay. Mm-hmm. People don't want to be cooped up. And look, I lived it, right? Facebook was remote way before all of this happened. And I've always been remote my entire career and always traveling. And people talk about it changing us temporarily. And I'm telling you, it changed us permanently. We are banking our investment thesis on this asset class of short-term rentals predominantly because of the shift in mobility and behavior of the human population. We are never going to be the same again where we're going to be in one place. You can get away every weekend if you want to, or every week to a different location because you're working remote, as long as you have an internet connection these days.
Yep.
And so, you know, these are some of the types of things that we are really excited about in this space. And, you know, it's really hard to scale, but that's really the challenge that we're taking on.
So this is interesting, man. So with your model, are you leveraging the companies that are out there, the Airbnbs now to do your marketing, to draw in the clientele, or are you like separating yourself from everybody?
That's a great question. And I think this is, in my opinion, a myth and a common topic talked about in this space. People are always like, you know, build your own direct brand, build your own traffic, allow people to come book on your own site. And let me tell you, it's expensive.
Oh yeah.
It's expensive to drive your own traffic, to drive your own bookings. And for the deal that you're getting on Airbnb or VRBO or booking.com, it's an absolute no-brainer. Now, I'm not saying it's not an option, right? Or you shouldn't supplement it with, right? But what I'm saying is you can't be good at everything. And I think every good operator knows that. And so if what we're really good at is we're really good at identifying properties, using technology and data to you know, identify which markets to enter, standing them up. We have an incredible operational team that Sabrina leads, right, from a design and an infrastructure perspective. And we have an incredible revenue and data management team. So we're able to drive the most juice out of the asset as possible and identify it. So because that's our advantage, I could care less if I'm giving Airbnb 3% of the booking, right, in order for them to bring the customer who's going to book it. All right. And honestly, when you look at the data, it shows that it's working.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, look, you want to go where the eyeballs already are. 100%. The eyeballs are there. They're spending a shit ton of money. They have credibility. They have the brand. You just got to link up the brand. But I want to dive in deep with your software. So is your software that you're utilizing on the front end to find the areas that you want to go, is it also figuring out how to, is there an algorithm built in to figure out how to maximize your profit on high weekends, low weekends, when stuff is coming to the city, or are you using a third party for that as an overlay?
So our software identifies the amenities, or let me take a step back actually. So in each property description, there are words that are used. For example, hot tub, right? And when you describe a listing. And so what we're able to do is we're able to correlate the word hot tub to either a higher or lower return, right? And we can do that with like every word, even words like kitchen. And I know kitchens, you think every place that you'd go to would have a kitchen, right? And that's an obvious one, right? But every single word, we're using machine learning technology to understand what we can map it to in terms of a qualitative understanding towards a quantitative return.
God. Right?
And so that's something that we're continuously building and evolving on. Now, I want to be clear that while our software is a great advantage, humans drive the engine, right? And so John, who's our head of data, Austin, who's our head of revenue, right? They take this data. We do use third-party pricing tools, but it's only as good as you make them, right? Mm-hmm. I think the average user takes the algorithm and goes with it. But understand that once an algorithm is used by 100,000 people, it becomes the norm. It becomes the standard, right? And so how do you actually pick up on that? And algorithms, at the end of the day, are not humans. We don't believe technology can do everything, right? And contrary to popular belief. So John and Austin, who are continuously looking at the data and driving revenue and adjusting pricing, right? Depending on what our goals are as a company and as a portfolio, that's their job. And they've been absolutely exceptional in doing so. And that's kind of going back to my point earlier. There's a reason we wanted to build the best talent infrastructure in this space.
Yeah.
The data doesn't matter unless you got the people behind it.
I just, before this podcast, I just interviewed somebody who that's his specialty in our space, in the investment space. All he does is go out and recruit top talent. And it is, I don't care how good your software is, how great your marketing is, what your processes and systems are. If you don't have top talent, you're dead in the water.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And that's a big deal for us, right? And our portfolio management team is, in my opinion, one of the best, right? And I think you just see it in the returns and the performance, right? Like we've been able to beat expectations by up to 30% on any given month. And that's just been a great performance indicator.
Let's talk about your structure. How many employees do you have right now, or team members do you have right now in your company?
Yep. So we're a team of about 24, you know, obviously split between W-2, 1099, et cetera. All of us are remote and we're all across the world. You have people in Canada, the US, overseas. You know, for us, we don't see borders. We see talent. To us, that's the most important thing.
Love it. Under management right now, I'm going to break out two questions. How many units do you guys have, like houses? And what's the valuation of the portfolio and the management right now?
So we have 61 properties that we have completed, 8 of which that have exited. So right now we'll have about 50-ish properties that are quote unquote live or being worked on. And assets under management on the capital side is going to be right about 20. Equity in general under management assets value is going to be close to 40-ish.
Fantastic. And now, on the business itself, because I may be wrong, but did you break the company out in two tranches where you have the investment pool for your operational business and then your investment pool for your actual physical real estate piece?
You're right on the money. So we took a traditional private equity approach and spun a tech play into it. So we actually have three, not two.
Wow.
So
wow.
We have our TechVestor brand, which is our technology and data and platform, and honestly attracts a lot of people that generally have a good amount of money to spend, given that we're in this space and we understand what attracts those types of clients. We have our Superhost Labs brand, which is our operating company, right? That's the brand that actually brings in the revenue management and drives the revenue and the data and does and actually interprets all that. And then of course we have our business or our LLC that holds the assets themselves, also known as a PropCo in traditional private equity. So for us, we have an OpCo, PropCo, and a tech and data solution, all of which that we own collectively.
you guys own. So when the money came in, it was not in the form of debt. It came in the form of equity to each one of these three companies. Beautiful.
We've never raised outside of our fund. We're fully bootstrapped. So Sabrina and I completely funded the business ourselves. We haven't taken on a single dollar of venture capital or anything, although we've been offered. And you know, for us, you know, I think contrary to popular belief, we didn't want to build a company that would necessarily scale and go public tomorrow. We wanted to build a profitable business from day one, not one that was always chasing growth. And the second you take on growth capital from a VC, I'm not saying it's a bad choice for us to do. I'm saying the second you do, your exit options completely change. It's not about now building something that's sustainable and scalable. It's oftentimes playing to an exit. Yeah. And for us in real estate, you know, we wanted to align our interests with our investors, and sustainability was top of mind, right? So that was highly critical for us.
What is your strategy? Talk to us about your strategy to raise capital now to fund your short-term rental deals.
First and foremost, it's education. It's podcasts like this. We create a lot of social and blog content, you know, and we talk about our story. We talk about short-term rentals. We continuously inform and educate. There are legal ways to raise capital, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on the type of, you know, structure that you're in. And I'm sure you've had several episodes around those types of things that people can refer to. But, you know, go out and invest the money, right? In your brand and in your growth and in your competitive advantage. It's funny because a lot of people ask me, Seif, how many short-term rentals do you own? And when I tell them I don't own any personally, they get absolutely shocked. They're like, how, why, but you're running a short-term rental fund. And I was like, exactly. And I have significant general partnership exposure, right, in that fund. They're like, well, what do you invest in? I'm like, well, I'm an LP in mobile home parks and self-storage and multifamily with operators that are significantly better than me in that asset class.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't sit here and tell you that, hey, like, we're great at everything. We're great at what we do. And that's, if you want to get exposure to short-term rentals, alternative investments, you know, we think we're a really great choice. But just like that, we know that there are other great operators in every other asset class that we give money to, right? And I give money to continue my real estate holdings as a whole, so that it's nicely diversified as well.
What are some of the reasons some of your investors would want to invest in your fund with your short-term rentals versus, like, you know, something else, apartment building, single family rentals? Like, why this fund? Why this type of asset class with your fund?
I mean, I think the first thing, and this is what we've really seen, it's been really kind of a funny journey, really. A lot of our investors come from multifamily. And the reason is because it's two completely different strategies. The first competitive advantage we have by nature is our asset class. I don't know how many people you've talked to, but I'll be willing to bet not too many people have a short-term rental fund that you talk to, right? And it might be the first. Well, there you go, right? And so we're naturally, by being different in our asset class, it's an immediate talking point where people are like, tell me more, right? We're kind of early, we're educating. That's why we focus a lot on education. The second thing is most other asset classes are typically, you know, things have their own things. Mobile home parks, great for depreciation. Multifamily, great for equity growth and velocity of equity, right? And capital, it's a proven asset class. Short-term rentals, great for two things, cash flow and utility. All of our investors get access to use every single one of our properties, right? So if you want something that has utility and lifestyle baked in and better than average yield, short-term rentals are going to be something that's going to be really interesting to you, right? To add to your portfolio. And in an inflationary world like we are in today, cash flow specifically, not cash, is king in many ways. And lastly, I think people see that we have the opportunity to hit a grand slam where you don't really see that in other asset classes. If you're investing in an apartment building today, you're not going to get, I don't care what anyone tells you, it's unlikely you're going to get a 3 or 4x on your equity over 3 or 4 years, right? I mean, like, there's nothing that's iconically done there. We have the elements because no one's really scaled this before. We don't know where our ceiling is, right? So a lot of people see us as an option that has potentially more volatility and more unknown risk, because it's not really been scaled to institutionalized like other asset classes. But that's also kind of the nice part. We don't really have an upside, right? We might sell for 3, 4x equity. We could, right? Sure. Are we underwriting that? We're not. I want to be very clear, right? We actually underwrite towards a 2x equity multiple over a 5-year period, generally on average. But can we exit for a 3 or 4? Yeah, because there's not really that many options to tell you that we can't. Multifamily ain't never going to do that, right? Because everything trades, it's stabilized. You already know. So that's really some of the advantages we have. And honestly, you throw in the technology and the team and the traction that we've been able to get to, there's little competition to us is another thing to think about, right? It's, if you want to invest in this asset class, you have to do it yourself or you work with people like us.
What kind of returns could an investor expect to make? Let me rephrase that. First off, what's the minimum investment that you guys will take into your fund?
So before I answer any of those questions, obviously, as you already know where this is going, right? General disclaimer, it's not a solicitation. Yes. Please do your own advice, all that kind of good stuff. But you know, how we think about our fund is we want it to be accessible. So it's a $25,000 minimum. It's traditionally around a 5-year hold. We're targeting a 2x equity multiple over a 5-year period. You know, things that we think are sustainable and attainable. And most importantly, it's diversified, right? What's cool with us also is, you know, outside of the lack of liability, right? The traditional GPLP structure is one investment gets you exposure to over 45, 55 plus assets versus, you know, in multifamily, you invest 50K and you get exposure to one asset typically.
Are you marrying the money that you bring into the fund with traditional financing, or is this 100% funded, the purchasing of the properties through your fund?
We're absolutely using leverage. And so we are using good debt is what I call it. And that's one of our competitive advantages in addition. And thank you for bringing that up. Most multifamily debt, and a lot of people don't know this, is on like a 3-1-1 schedule, right? With floating and variable rates, or typically at most a 5-year period, at best a 5-year period, right? Because usually they're going to stabilize to an extent and sell on to the next guy. All of our debt is 10 plus years or longer. And the reason we do that, even though we only have a 5-year fund or projected 5-year fund, is because we never want to be forced sellers. Go back to 2008. What happened?
Yes,
95% right. of everything that blew up was because people's backs against the wall, equity down, floating debt, adjustable rate mortgages, and they lost their shirt.
Yeah.
We never want to be in that position. If our worst case scenario is we got to hold 10 years and collect 6, 7, 8, 10 cash on cash, where shit has happened.
I got to tell you, man, very impressed. Very impressed. You got to update this, bro. I had no idea. Completely different direction.
I'm taking the feedback, Billy.
Yeah, look, if people want to learn more about you, your software, your investing, like point them in the right direction.
They can find us at techvestor.com. You know, we publish a lot of data and we'll continue to publish them. You know, feel free to stop by, not even if you're interested in investing, but if you're looking to learn about short-term rentals, my team can help you understand what the world looks like there. We even have an education deck as part of our data room, right? And the entire part of that deck is just to tell you about the history of short-term rentals. We're trying to educate more people about the space. And I think short-term rentals get a lot of a big bad rep because it's taking away affordable housing and these types of things. But there's a lot of good that comes with it by providing really fantastic experiences for families. And it's not a place where we throw parties, right? So any questions you have, reach out. I'm cf@techfester.com. And you know, anyone on our team is fantastic. They're the real MVPs behind the scenes.
Love it, brother. Much success to you. You're a young guy, bright guy, going in a I'm anxious to see where this thing is going to go over the next 5 to 10 years for you. It's going to go like right to the ceiling, bro, right through the sky.
I appreciate the kind words, Billy, and thank you so much for having me today on the show. So it's been a pleasure.
Nah, my pleasure likewise, man. Thanks again for coming on.
Of course. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Unstoppable Real Estate Investing Wealth. My mission is to give you, my listeners, the blueprint for success, the insider secrets for starting, growing, and scaling your real estate investing business so you can experience and live the unstoppable lifestyle. I've made it simple for you. To catapult yourself to success, go to billyssecrets.com. That's B-I-L-L-Y-S, secrets.com. There you will find every single tool, tip, trick, strategy, system, and secret used to make millions of dollars as a real estate investor. Everything my team uses and my guests use all in one place for you to tap into so you can start, grow, and scale your real estate investing business. I really hope you implement what you're learning. I hope you utilize these tools, tips, tricks, strategies, and secrets. And I hope to see you on the next episode. God bless. Bye-bye.